Hi, I'm Nick Rigoretti's, and this is the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast, the show for grapplers and martial artists that want to evolve both on and off the mat. Hey guys, welcome to episode 13 of the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast. Thank you for all the amazing feedback after episode 12, the Roger Gracie Show. That was one of my favorite ones to record. I had so much fun doing that. Roger's just such a cool guy, and I love listening to the way his mind works when it comes to jiu-jitsu. So thank you again for sending me all those messages and telling me how much you enjoyed it. Really hearing stuff like that keeps me going. This next guest is pretty interesting. His name is William Graziade IV. You may know him by his other name, which is Billy Biohazard. He's one of the singers and guitarists for the band Biohazard, which was a huge heavy metal punk fusion band from the 90s. This guy's basically a rock star. He's a singer for a new band called Power Flow at the moment. And I think one of the reasons he's interesting is not only is he involved at such a high level in the music industry and is a frontman for all these big bands, but he gives us insight into how, even whilst being on tour, and you know, sleeping in tour buses and traveling to 42 different countries over the space of 18 months on an average tour, the guy was still able to train and keep his connection with jiu-jitsu, and I thought that was really interesting. He's also got some cool stories about things that happen on the road, in particular those that related to fighting and jiu-jitsu, which I'm sure you guys will enjoy. So here's episode 13.
Okay guys, welcome back to Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast. This is episode 13, and I have with me an interesting guest. I never thought I'd have someone like this on the show. His name is William Graziade III, also known as Billy Biohazard. He is one of the founding members of a very popular, I would say, metal band. Is that correct, Billy?
Yes, it's Billy Graziade, but I am the fourth, and my son is the fifth, so there's a long line of heritage. In respect, I got to give a correct shout out to my old man and my son.
Sorry. You know what? I just spoke to the reason I confused that. I was just speaking to another jiu-jitsu guy last night called Phil Milagarize, another Italian guy, and he's Phil Milagarize III. So that's why I accidentally said that. My apologies. Billy, thank you so much for coming on the show.
All good, brother. How you doing? Yeah.
I'm good, bro. I'm good. I'm just counting the days till I get out of London on Monday. This place is not compatible with me anymore. it's putting me in a constant bad mood, which is really not who I am. I'm sure you've experienced stuff like that before.
Yeah, I grew up in New York City and moved to California, so I can relate to different having your roots kind of replanted somewhere. Sometimes it's a little different. It's funny because I'm looking forward to going back to London. I can't wait. But
the thing is, it's a cool place, and like my fiance is here now, and she's like, I don't know why you don't like it here. It's so cool and it's so much fun. And I just said to her, look, you haven't lived here for 10 years and worked here and been on the trains 4 hours a day, and like you've been on holiday London. You haven't been in like working and living London. And I don't think she got that, but that's I guess the difference, right?
Yep, I got it. It's all about balance. So you look.
Anyway, enough negativity, dude. I'm sorry. What a horrible way to start the show with you. I'm sorry, Billy. But man, you've got an interesting story. So you were a lot of us have been doing jiu-jitsu for a long time, but you're one of the guys who's been doing it the longest. You started all the way back in 1993. Is that correct?
I think that I'm probably the most experienced lowest ranked black belt out there. But yeah, we that's a funny story. If you want all the great details with the comedy, I can keep it in.
And all of them. So every single one.
We started in, there was a article about the Gracies, and I think it was in Black Belt magazine, but we studied other arts in New York and grew up, you know, as like street fighter, you know, thuggish kids that had no guidance and got involved. You know, we were normal kid stuff in New York City.
But when you say we, who are you referring to?
The other guys in Biohazard.
Okay, cool.
My group of friends. And we were young kids, but my drummer and I studied different martial arts. He turned me on to this article about the Gracies. And he you know, we read the article and we were like, yeah, sure, it's unbeatable. Of course, because you haven't met me. Or, you know, and so that whole thing, you know, it was the beginning of a new era in the martial art world, and UFC hadn't started yet. So no one, everybody always said that their art was the best, and every teacher that we had said their art was unbeatable. 6 months later, we were on tour, and my drummer Danny reminded me about that article. He told me that the Gracies that we read about, they're having a fight. It's a no-holds-barred fight. One of the brothers is living in Los Angeles, and he's throwing this fight. No rules, all different styles of martial arts. We all know the history about that. But for us, we saw it the next day, bro. We searched all around our martial arts friends in New York and tried to find anybody who knew jiu-jitsu, anybody who could introduce us to somebody who could teach us and train us this style. Like everybody on the West Coast and probably around the world that saw that, you know, and that eventually found their way to jiu-jitsu. It's a common story I hear, you know, among all the people. So for us, we hunted down and got a hold of this dude named Kaseka Muniz, and we hired him, brought him on tour, and he started us in our career with jiu-jitsu. Not career. He started us on our passion and love of jiu-jitsu began with him. So the funny thing, there's a lot of other stories. I'll spare you the details of those stories about Kaseka. We're still friends. But I remember he would show us, he was a purple belt. And back then, a purple belt was like gold. It was like a black belt. Hmm. So for us, he was, you know, our first start. And like I said, there's a whole other, an hour long of stories that are pretty funny involved with him and that experience. But eventually we did our next record we recorded in L.A., and when we lived here for like 4 months to do this record, and we trained, went to Hickson's when he was on Pico and became friends with Lamal and trained there every day. And we were coming up as white belts under him and, been friends with Hickson ever since. We moved to, of course there was nothing on the East Coast. So when around that time, after that record, we came back and Henzo and Craig Kukuk relocated to New York. They were actually in Jersey at first. So wherever Henzo was, we would travel to. Like he would do like Sunday morning classes in at Gold's Gym in Jersey. And then he eventually was in the west side of Manhattan at a ice rink, I think we were going to. And then he had he was teaching out at Wing Chun School. So on the East Coast, we were always under Henzo. And always with the Gracies. And then I bought a place in Utah, Salt Lake, and became close with Pedro Sauer, and then trained there whenever I was off tour. And then we did another record in LA again. And then we trained again with Hickson, of course, and Louise. Lamar, we took on tour with us to South America, and that was a blast. So that was the beginning of my career and start with jiu-jitsu. And that led me up to eventually moving to Los Angeles in 2008, and then went right to Henner and Hickson and Horian in Torrance, and I've been there since.
So a whole bunch of questions come to my mind. Like, one of the first ones is, why did you move from Hickson's Academy in L.A. to Horian's Academy?
So Hickson, when I came here, I've always been with the brothers. In Brazil, we would train with Horler. I've done Horler, tons of privates with Horler. He was with this guy in Jersey, David Adiv. So I remember what rang the loudest in my ears was hearing Horian say that the water is most pure at its source. Go to the top of the mountain. And I just trained and learned some of the greatest techniques and had some of the greatest experience with people who were trained by people who were trained by people who were trained by other people that were trained by Gracies. But I whenever I could, I always just hunted out, you know, the purest source. So when we moved here in 2008, my wife's Brazilian and got sick of the East Coast weather, and she laid it down and said, we go back to Brazil or we go to Los Angeles. So I course, we picked Los Angeles. Hickson was no longer teaching anymore. He was in Brazil. And we live here in South Bay. It was the closest school. And I was never a competitor, physically a competitor. Mentally, I'm very competitive. But it was just the lineage. And I haven't regretted walking into what we call Jiu-Jitsu heaven one day since.
That's awesome. And when did you get graded to your black belt?
Last year, December.
And why do you think it took you so long to get a black belt? What do you think the reasons for that are?
I think everybody has their own path, you know. And to me, I look at it like it's a I'm a white belt again, because it's a whole new understanding. You get your black belt, and it feels like, before it feels like, oh, it's the end of the road. And now I realize it. Now I basically have an understanding of jiu-jitsu, and now the real learning begins. So for me to get there, traveling with a band, we would go on tour, bro. You know, now it's a different story. But for, you know, coming up as, you know, we were the only rock and roll dudes and musicians who trained. I mean, nobody knew the art. I remember touring with Sepultura, who are from Brazil, and asking them, I couldn't wait to ask them if they knew about jiu-jitsu. And the first thing that they said was, what's jiu-jitsu? And I'm like, what? It's the biggest thing in your country. They're like, we never heard of it. I'm like, how do you not don't know the Gracies? They're like, no, never heard of them. Eventually they started training, and they ended up putting Hoist in one of their videos. But it was so, in our worlds as fighters and martial arts practitioners, it seemed like the biggest thing since sliced bread, but it was relatively small. And as we all know, in the 90s, it wasn't on every corner. So when we would tour on an average tour, especially for Biohazard back then, like we were just young kids. There were no families, no kids, no responsibilities. So our tours would go for a year and a half, and we'd do a record. We'd go on tour for a year and a half around the world, play some 42 countries, and have a great time doing it. So, every 2 or 3 months, we come home for a week or so, have a little time off, and then go back out. During those times home, I would train every day as much as I could, because that was the only way to get it. Besides people like Sega, Louise, a buddy of mine from Salt Lake, we took on tour, another black belt here from here in LA, we took on tour. It's a different, it was hard to do it, to get your training in on the road back then, unless you had somebody with you. And that didn't, situations didn't always attribute to a conducive environment to bring mats, bring a trainer. So occasionally we would be, you know, pampered with having somebody that could teach us on tour. But if we didn't have somebody with us, we'd go for, you know, we'd work on a little bit of technique backstage, but, you know, after a bunch of reg burns, in especially partying as we were partying.
Yeah.
So
I can imagine.
It was that schedule that brought me to 2008. And then 2008, we had our son. We had another daughter who had just started training. And I think I became much more astute at juggling things. You know, you become a father and the day suddenly becomes 36 hours. And you're able to you become more efficient with things. And I always looked at it like I would sacrifice other things to train jiu-jitsu. And then everything just seemed to fit right in. And I had a schedule. I was able to train. You know, in Torrance, it's great. I mean, my wife just got back from the morning class. There's a 7 a.m. class. There's 11 a.m. class. There's an early evening class. So it seemed just to be, we were close enough, and I was able to stay steady, and it helped me. You know, I think maybe it was a point in my life where I just was able to juggle things without being stressed over it. And I no longer had to sacrifice other things for jiu-jitsu. Jiu-jitsu just seemed to fit right in. And it was something that became more of, as a lot of people can relate, more of a centering, you know, part of my life that without it, you know, it's like an alcoholic who doesn't get a drink.
So, I mean, it seems to me, I've noticed that same kind of pattern of guys really start to accelerate their development once their training becomes consistent. And consistency doesn't mean you need to train 8 times a week. It's better to train 3 to 4 times a week, you know, 50 weeks of the year, as opposed to you burn yourself out by doing this whole bunch of sessions in a very short space of time, and then you get injured or you overtrain or you get bored, and then you take another 6 months off, and that's not very conducive to progress, I've seen. So I can imagine that your lifestyle, you described going to 42 countries in 18 months and then coming back for a week every couple of months and cramming in some lessons. I'm amazed you even stuck it out. I'm amazed you still train jiu-jitsu, because that's pretty much as far from the ideal conditions as possible.
Yeah, I think Pedro Sauer gave me a tip once, and he said, because I would always travel, I'd be at different schools. Like if we were had a week off in Los Angeles, then I'd go to Hickson's. If we were, you know, I had a week off in New York, I'd go to Henzo's. So it was always with different people, and he recommended keeping a log. And I, what I would do is I would keep notes of who I trained with, when, where, and what we worked on. And it helped me keep track of things. I mean, I think it's more important to, like you said, have a schedule that works for you, that's realistic versus, and it's common. I mean, we all seen it. People, they get bit by the jiu-jitsu bug, and they start, you know, they change their diet, they start working out, and they talk, you know, all they're interested in eating is acai, and everything is Brazil, and they're so into it, and then slowly, you don't see them anymore. It's how life is about balance. But I think success, like even the path to black belt, it's how you navigate the difficult times, the injuries, the bad news, and with jiu-jitsu, it could be injuries and things like that. In life, it's easy if everyone was just plagued with great news, everyone would be successful. But the successful people that navigate well through the difficult times and the bad moments are the ones who are successful. That's a true test of success for me. And for me, the jiu-jitsu has become such a part of, as everyone listening can relate to, of our lives, that I just found a place where it fits. Everyone in the family trains. It's more of an issue where, well, I wanted to train, and can you watch the kids? That's more of an issue in my home versus, you're going to train again? You know, that thing doesn't happen here.
Yeah, that's cool. When you speak about navigating the difficult times, like, this is a two-part question. So could you share with us some of those difficult times as they relate, that you've experienced in your life as it relates to jiu-jitsu, and also maybe a non-jiu-jitsu aspect of your life that's been really, really difficult?
Yeah, there's tons. One that's popped in my head, I remember I had the first knee injury, second knee injury happened. I was here in LA. We were in the middle of a tour, and I needed surgery, and there wasn't enough time between tours to get the surgery for recovery time. So my doc was like, you know, okay, let's try to do it after the next tour. And that tour would come back, you know, would come around in the break. I'd go back to the doc, and, you know, he's like, oh, no, I need 4 weeks off. I'm like, dude, I'm only home for two. Can't you just do it, and I'll rehab it on tour? Anyways, making a long story short, I remember it was really bad, and being on tour just made it worse. Came back and trained with Henry once. He's like, what are you doing? Your knee's like so messed up. You got to get surgery. And I looked at him and like I said, it's kind of like, you know, driving a rental car. You don't need to take care of it because you know you're going to return it. I knew I was going to get my knee fixed, and I just kept training and working and touring on it. And eventually, I remember kept coming home, and we did X-rays right before surgery. I came home from tour, and that last tour was rough. It was to a point where my leg would lock up, and the meniscus, it was all these torn not ACLs but MCLs and meniscus. Mm-hmm. And my meniscus was folded over, and we get locked up on tour, And in the mornings, I would look like an old man, just hobbling. But then I would loosen up, stretch, and roll a little bit. And by the time I got on the show, the whole day was focused on 23 hours of just being able to pull off an hour on stage. Made it through that tour, kicked ass, came home, jumped into surgery. And I remember we took x-rays, and my doc said, what the hell did you do? It looks a lot different than before. I said, I've been on tour. He goes, you move around a lot? I'm like, yeah, like, you know, like a chicken with his head cut off. And I had worn down so much of the meniscus. It was like basically grinding bone on bone. And he's like, see all these striations? Yeah. So the what I said about returning the used car, when you return the used car, as long as you have insurance, you're good. But you can't take insurance on your bones and your body. So I won't be now when I've gotten injured, I take the time off I need, heal as quick as I can, and try to come back and train with an injury, but trying to nurse it, and you become more astute at being able to, okay, let me just train this side because my left shoulder's a little sore, and it helps you,
Yeah, it's funny you mention. Funny you mention that, because I'm dealing with a meniscal injury in my left knee at the moment, and man, I'm starting to realize it's almost like a rite of passage for jiu-jitsu guys to have a knee injury. I'd say 90% of all the black belts I know have either had surgery on one of their knees, or they've had a serious knee injury, and it's really, really demotivating, man. I mean, I thought it was getting better, and then as I'm almost ready to get on the mat, like something will happen and it'll pop, and it's just so demotivating. So for anyone out there that's listening, Billy Biohazard came back from it. You can too. Have you had any other serious injuries?
Yeah, there was one on tour a couple years ago. I was training in Northern England. I don't recall where. And my buddies that I train with are probably going to, if they hear this, I apologize. But I broke a rib, cracked a rib training. And we were in a small academy and a lot of people. And I did and someone had, they're playing open guard. And I jumped over to lock in a toe hold. And when I don't know the name of it, but you flip over and I hook the foot and they roll with me and I snap it in and tap them out. But I had to adjust it because there was somebody next to me. And when I adjusted how I would normally flow, I came down and landed on the dude's leg and my rib, cracked the rib. No big deal. I've had that was like the fifth broken rib. But it was it's just a crack. It wasn't like I knew it was injured and I knew it wasn't a clean break. It wasn't that major, but I was fine. And, a little sore, blah, blah, blah. We played a show that night, and about a week later, we were on stage in France. And I was on drum riser, and I jumped up in the air. And as I came down, I play it. If you know much about guitars, I play a Gibson SG. And the way the guitar is shaped, there's these two horns. It's like these curved points that come out of the guitar by the front of the neck. Mm-hmm. And one of them hit the rib and caught my ribs, and that snapped it. I felt it. I heard it. I was like, oh, I couldn't breathe. And I broke into I think four ribs before. So I knew the pain. I knew what it was. I sucked it up, could barely sing. I had, made it through the show, went to the hospital, and they put, I had never seen it before, but it was phenomenal. And I remember the people, signing autographs in the ambulance. Can I get a picture with you? It was pretty funny. But anyways, at the hospital, they gave me this wrap, and it was like maybe 10 inches wide, and it's a roll, and it's like a stretchy, ultra sticky piece of fabric. It's kind of like an ace bandage, but it's sticky. And what you do with ribs, you can't bind your ribs together because you need to breathe and sneeze or laugh or whatever. Mm-hmm. So the concept was they start my midsection, they glue it, it sticks to your skin. And as they stretch it, they pull it around and they bring it all the way to your backbone. So what you're doing is you're sandwiching your ribs together with this elastic adhesive, and it was amazing. It worked fine. It stays on. I was on for 3 weeks, but I was able to finish a tour And then I came home and I felt good. So I started rolling with it. And I was able to roll through it, that whole injury just with this incredible tape. And I haven't found it here in the States. It's not the K tape that people use. This is like heavy duty tape, but it's phenomenal.
Yeah, it sounds like something, a broken rib as well. I could have used some of that back in the day. So, Billy, could you tell me, it sounds, I'm guessing you guys on tour, you playing this pretty aggressive style of music, and you're young guys, you've been learning jiu-jitsu, there's mosh pits going on, there's people probably trying to get on the stage, you guys are probably going to a bunch of bars, having after parties and stuff like that. So I'm guessing the situations arose in which you guys had to use jiu-jitsu on, in like a kind of altercation or fight. Did that ever happen?
Yeah, many times. But let me start by this. I used to fight so much all the time when I didn't know how to fight. The minute I learned how to fight, I stopped fighting.
That's right.
And I felt like, you learn about leaving your ego at the door. And you get drilled in your head from day one, and you kind of have no choice. You just get, especially coming up back in the old days where, you got thrown into the sharks as a white belt. You got your ass handed to you by all the black belts. But so many stories, bro. I've had, people, members of my band get choked out by people we would take on tour because they lost at a card game. I put people to sleep many times. There's the cross collar choke face to face, which is very odd. That's the first thing you're going to get headbutted with or punched. But for some reason, that's the go-to thing. I'm around drunk people all the time. I don't do drugs. I don't drink. And I'm okay. That's just, I'm surrounded by that. And it comes with the territory of rock and roll music. Everybody goes out and parties and they get drunk but I've had numerous times where I had to, keep people away at bay and then choke them as I'm talking to them, saying, "You don't want to mess with me. I have no problems. I bumped into you on accident. I said, I'm sorry. I'm sorry again." And they don't listen, blah, blah, blah. And you slide one hand in, the other hand in, and you walk them. Ireland, I remember I was leaving after we played a show. It was a sold out show. I went next door to talk to some friends. Tour manager came in, said, "Okay, we're ready to go." I said, "Cool, let me say goodbye to my buddies." Walked through the club, and they were setting up for like a DJ night, and the DJ was spinning some tracks. So I stopped. This dude comes up behind me, shoulder checks me, and I check him. I'm standing there in base, ready to go, and he looks at me, and he's got his hood on, and I'm like, "What's the problem?" And he's like, "What?" And he's got mouthy, and he starts tapping his. He steps to me. I said, "Bro," I said, "I don't know what your problem is." I said, "I got no beef, no problem. Keep going." And he kept coming to me. I said, "Last warning, bro." And he stepped one more step. I threw my hands in and I choked him and walked him backwards. And I said, "Bro, I have no problem with you. Just chill out." And I walked him back on the stage. By the time we took two steps back, three steps back, 6 seconds, he was out. I left him asleep on the stage. Turned around and walked to the bus, and then we left Ireland.
That's great. That's great. He's probably doing jiu-jitsu now. He probably woke up and thought, "What the fuck happened to me?" And someone told him, and he realized, "I got to start training jiu-jitsu."
Hopefully. So, that's why I learned.
So you guys used to take like jiu-jitsu guys on tour. I can't quite remember the name. Is it Kaseka?
Kaseka Muniz.
Kaseka. You used to take guys like Kaseka and Limao on tour, and did these guys almost function as bodyguards as well as jiu-jitsu instructors? Were they ever involved in altercations and things like that?
Yeah, actually, yeah. We always had a thing. I would tell all the guys, I'm like, "Listen, we need an excuse for management and accounting, our accountants, to be like, you're going to take somebody to train you on tour." So we would give them a job as security, and their job was like, converse with security, tell them how we like people coming on stage and stage diving, explain how it works, and then let's go train. So that was what we would do. But I remember telling all the guys we would take on tour, I said, "Listen, if we get a fight and if I'm winning, let it go. If I'm losing, break it up super fast.
That's great. That's fantastic.
Kinsaker, I remember we had a bunch of issues with him. I remember the one, and it's good in, not issues, but stories. I remember being on tour with Slayer, and they had a guy who was a Arizona State wrestler. He was a rigger, and he was part of the Slayer crew. And we had our guy, Kaseka. So once room, and Kaseka would train us every day and teach us stuff, and we would bring Match on tour. But they, a couple of the guys, once they got wind that we were big into fighting, UFC just started out. So one of their guys pitched this idea of having the Biohazard guy and the Slayer guy fight.
That's great.
So we did this thing, you know, in front of the stage during the day, in some arena somewhere, and they fought. Of course, Kaseka, the dude was a wrestler, but Kaseka just, you know, pulled guard, went to his back, and armbar, beat him up. And the guy was a great guy. He eventually wanted to learn jiu-jitsu and rolled around with us for a bit, but those things were pretty common.
That's amazing, like having your own jiu-jitsu guy that you can just put into fights for you, almost like a real-life UFC game character. That's awesome. That's my favorite of your stories so far. But Lima, man, I know you're a busy guy. You're about to leave on tour, and you've already given us plenty of your time, and I actually have another podcast guest queued up for 2 minutes from now, so I'm going to have to end it as well. But I just want to thank you so, so much for coming on. If the listeners want to hear more about you or your music, where should they go?
Okay, so I'll be quick. Thank you for the time, bro. I have a new band. It's called Power Flow. Power Flow without W. You can search us all over the internet. It's me and the singer from Cypress Hill with some other brothers from Los Angeles, some bigger bands, Fear Factory, Downset, our brother Fernando from Brazil. I also, and that's Power Flow on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. I also have an organization that is very, I love what you got going on with Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood, and I know some of your history, and much kudos for that, bro. I have something called Rock Jitsu. Rock Jitsu is a nonprofit organization of musicians who train and fans of people. It's not just for musicians, but there's a lot of us in bands that are big into Jiu-Jitsu, and the concept is that when we're on tour, whether together or singularly, we go and we do a seminar at a school, and we can talk about the band, our jiu-jitsu, we can share some techniques, but the donation-based seminar goes to the charity of our choice. And it's a cool thing, but you'd be surprised at how many rock and roll guys and musicians train out there.
That's a really cool initiative. If people want to find out about that, where do they go?
Facebook, Rock Jitsu, and then the other band is called Power Flow.
Okay. Billy, that's really great. Thank you so much again for your time. I'm sure I'm going to be spending a lot of time in Los Angeles next year. I hope to share the mat with you one day, and we can share some more stories. And I'm sure we'll have you on the show again at some point in the future. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, brother. Have a good one. Take care.
That was a lot of fun. He's a really, really cool, down-to-earth guy. And it's interesting because you wouldn't think after living the life that guy's lived that he'd be so approachable and so chilled out and so eager to share his stories. That was really cool. I love how even though he's on a tour bus for 18 months and he's probably not getting much sleep and probably partying like crazy and living this insane lifestyle, the guy still keeps his passion for jiu-jitsu and still trains whenever he can. That's really, really cool. Guys, thank you so much for listening to the show, and we really do enjoy your continued support. Remember, our sponsors, if you visit them and purchase from them, it helps keep us going, pay for all hosting fees and all that other boring stuff. So we have a new one this week. Not sure if any of you guys have tried CBD. CBD is a cannabinoid from the marijuana plant. And basically, it's one little component that's been isolated. So it doesn't get you high or have any of those effects, but it does have some clinically proven beneficial effects physiologically, mainly that it reduces inflammation and increases recovery. And obviously those are two perfect things for jiu-jitsu athletes. My business partner, who's a extremely qualified and high-level doctor, swears by it, and he says it's one of the reasons he's still able to train so often, even in his 40s. So I would recommend giving CBD a try. And if you do decide to give it a try, there's no better one to use than Truth Naturals. Truth Naturals was started by a good friend of mine called Trent, and he really went like to the ends of the earth to source the best quality CBD he could. He's put a lot of work into this. I highly recommend you check it out. You can head on over to truthnaturals.co.uk and you can get any one of their products for, you'll get a discount of 10 quid off your first order with the promo code JJB15. So please check out Truth CBD. Then also there's Butcher Box. Guys, I keep saying it, if you want to be healthy and you're a meat eater, you cannot be eating factory farmed or factory produced meat. Not only is it not good for your body because it's full of hormones and other crap, I think on a spiritual and karmic level, it's not a good thing to be doing. So what you can do is get grass-fed, humanely reared, and excellent quality meat from Butcher Box. They'll deliver it straight to your door. And trust me when I tell you, this is amazing meat. It is absolutely amazing. You can get $15 off your first order and free bacon if you use the coupon code JJB15 at checkout. And to get that, all you need to do is go to butcherbox.com. And then last but not least, if you guys want to rep the brand and show what we're all about at Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood, the community vibe of what we're doing, please get some Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood apparel. We have very, very high quality, very cool Jiu-Jitsu gear. It's the kind of stuff that I wanted to have before I had a jiu-jitsu apparel company. This is the stuff I wanted made, and that's why one of the reasons we started making it is because I just couldn't find similar stuff anywhere. We've got belts, we've got rash guards, we've got fantastic kimonos, we've got t-shirts, hoodies, and also there's online instructional learning materials by yours truly, and including some of my good buddies like Kit Dale and Mike Bidwell. You can get anything in the store for 10% off if you use the code podcast at checkout. So guys, thanks for your support, thanks for listening, and I will be back next week with another episode of the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood podcast. Until then, train hard and train smart.